ever stop and think about what powers, like literally powers, everything around us?
I don't know about you, but I don't think about it nearly enough.
Me neither, right? Like we just expect the lights to turn on, our phones to charge, the whole bit, but it's electricity that makes it all work.
It really is the engine behind, well, pretty much everything these days.
Totally. And we're only getting more reliant on energy, what with all the new tech and everything.
Absolutely. So it makes you wonder, like, where's all that power going to come from down the line?
And that's exactly what we're diving into today, the future of energy and some seriously interesting ideas about how we're going to keep up with the demand.
Should be fascinating.
Totally. And to guide us through it, we have the insights of Bob, who's done a deep dive on this whole topic.
Now, Bob's background is actually in finance. He's a professor for years before turning his attention to investing.
Right. So he's looking at this whole energy landscape through a different lens than you might expect.
Yeah, he's not an engineer or anything. He's thinking about it from a more financial, big picture perspective, which I think is super valuable.
I agree. And he starts by posing a pretty crucial question, which is, can our current energy infrastructure actually handle the kind of growth in demand we're expecting?
Because it's only going up from here, right?
Exactly. And to illustrate his point, he uses some pretty striking examples.
Like what?
Well, think about the explosion of data centers, you know, those massive server farms that power the internet.
Right, and all those AI programs that are suddenly everywhere.
Exactly. And those things are energy hogs, so the demand from them is just going through the roof.
Yeah, I remember reading about Microsoft making a deal to actually restart a reactor at Three Mile Island just to power their AI work.
Exactly. So that gives you an idea of the scale we're talking about here. And it's not just data centers.
Right, electric vehicles are another big one.
Huge. And every single EV needs charging. So you've got to factor that into the equation, too.
Plus, there's desalination plants, which use a ton of energy, but they're going to become more important as water gets scarcer.
Absolutely. And Bob even brings up cryptocurrency mining, which, believe it or not, consumes a crazy amount of power.
It's amazing how much energy we use without even realizing it.
For sure. And to really grasp the sheer volume of electricity we're going to need, Bob talks in terms of terawatt hours, which just sounds kind of abstract,
That's millions and millions of watt hours, right?
Yeah, basically imagine powering every home in Listener City for a whole year. That's a terawatt hour.
Wow. Okay, that puts it in perspective.
Right. And when you frame it like that, it really makes you question whether the current grid can handle it.
Especially since it's not exactly new, is it?
No, not at all. And that's another thing Bob highlights, the US power grid, well, it's pretty old and it wasn't designed for this kind of demand.
True. And it's not just age, right? There are capacity issues, reliability concerns, cybersecurity vulnerabilities.
You name it. And then there's a whole environmental impact to consider, especially since so much of our energy still comes from fossil fuels.
Yeah, it's not exactly a sustainable system as it stands.
And to drive home the point about how different countries are approaching energy, Bob brings up China.
I'm guessing their grid is a little more, shall we say, modern.
To say the least, in fact, their largest power plant dwarfs anything we have here in the US.
Seriously.
Yeah, and I think that comparison is really meant to challenge our assumptions about how energy production is done.
Because China's approach, while it might be efficient in some ways, it's also pretty centralized, right?
Exactly, and that comes with its own set of potential problems.
Like, what happens if there's a major disruption? Right? The whole system could be vulnerable.
Precisely, and this is where I think Bob starts to hint at a different path, one that moves away from this idea of a massive centralized grid.
Interesting. So, where does he propose we go from here?
Well, his solution centers around what are called small modular reactors, or SMRs.
Okay, so we're talking nuclear power.
We are. But before you dismiss it out of hand, I think Bob makes a pretty compelling case for why this technology might be worth a second look.
I'm all ears.
Okay, so SMRs, they're basically like miniaturized versions of traditional nuclear plants.
Okay, so smaller, more manageable.
Exactly. And one of the big advantages there is that they're manufactured off-site and then transported to where they're needed.
Which means they could potentially be deployed much faster.
Way faster. And we're talking about a drastic reduction in construction time from something like 15 years down to just 3.
Wow, that's a game changer if you're trying to meet rapidly increasing demand.
Absolutely. But what Bob is most excited about is the potential of SMRs to enable a truly decentralized energy grid.
So instead of having these massive power plants serving huge swaths of the country, you'd have smaller, more localized grids.
Exactly. And he even talks about the possibility of mini grids within a state, even within a city.
Wow. So your neighborhood could have its own little power source.
That's the idea. And I think that vision of increased resilience really appeals to him. You know, the idea that a power outage on one side of town wouldn't necessarily knock out the whole system.
Right. Because right now, we're all kind of interconnected, so if one part of the grid goes down, it can have a ripple effect.
Totally. But with a more distributed system, you'd have more redundancy built in.
I can see how that would be appealing from a security standpoint, too.
For sure. And to really flesh out this idea, Bob uses the state of Arizona as a kind of thought experiment.
Okay, so how would this whole SMR thing actually play out in the real world?
Well, he lays out two potential scenarios for Arizona.
Okay, let's hear him.
So in the first scenario, you'd have these four-module SMR systems, so think mid-sized, strategically placed in smaller Arizona cities like Flagstaff, Prescott, Lake Havasu.
Places that are currently pretty reliant on the larger grid, right?
Exactly. And Bob even goes into the specifics of how much power each of those locations needs, showing how these SMRs could realistically meet those needs.
Interesting. So it's not just theoretical. He's really trying to map it out.
Totally. And then he contrasts that with option two, which focuses on larger 12-module SMR systems.
So those would be better suited for more densely populated areas, I'm guessing.
Exactly. He specifically mentions the Phoenix metropolitan area, which needs a whopping 1.1 gigawatts of power.
Yeah, that's a lot of juice.
No kidding. But what I find so fascinating about these two scenarios is how they highlight the flexibility of this approach. Like, SMRs could potentially be scaled to meet the needs of very different locations.
From big cities to smaller towns. That's pretty cool.
And it's that adaptability that Bob seems most excited about. The idea that this technology could be customized to fit a variety of situations.
So it's not one size fits all. It's more like finding the right tool for the job.
Precisely. And that's where Bob's financial mind really comes into play, because he then starts digging into the economics of all this. You know, how do we actually pay for this kind of energy overhaul?
Right. Because these SMRs, they're not going to be cheap, are they?
That's the million-dollar question. Or more accurately, the multi-billion dollar question.
And I'm guessing this is where private investment comes in.
It has to. Bob argues that the scale of investment needed for this kind of infrastructure project is just too massive for the government to handle alone.
He's probably right. And it's not like there isn't precedent for this kind of public-private partnership.
Exactly. He even brings up the example of Microsoft in Three Mile Island, which is interesting because it shows that even big tech companies are willing to invest in energy solutions.
It makes sense. They need the power, right?
Exactly. So it's becoming this really interesting convergence of different sectors all trying to figure out how to keep the lights on, literally.
It's like a whole new energy landscape is emerging.
Totally. And Bob is right there on the front lines analyzing it all. But it's not all, you know, smooth sailing.
Right. There are always challenges.
Big ones. And to his credit, Bob doesn't shy away from them.
Like, what are some of the hurdles he sees?
Well, for starters, there's the whole public perception of nuclear power.
Right. It's a bit of a touchy subject, to say the least.
Yeah, and for good reason, there have been some, you know, high-profile incidents that have definitely shaped how people feel about it.
Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, those are hard to forget.
Exactly. So there's definitely a PR hurdle there, convincing people that this new generation of nuclear technology is safe and reliable.
Right, because even if the technology itself is sound, if the public isn't on board, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Totally. And then on top of that, you've got the whole regulatory landscape to navigate.
Which is never simple. Especially when it comes to something as complex as nuclear power.
Yeah. And we're not just talking about tweaking a few existing regulations here.
Right. This is like a whole new ballgame. Potentially a complete overhaul of how we think about and regulate energy production.
Exactly. So Bob acknowledges that there would need to be some pretty significant changes to the rule book to make this vision a reality.
And those kinds of changes don't happen overnight. They take time, political will, a lot of back and forth.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the regulations themselves. It's about the whole bureaucracy that surrounds them. The approvals, the permits, the inspections, the whole nine yards.
Right. And you know there's going to be pushback from somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I mean, anytime you're talking about disrupting a system as entrenched as the energy sector, you're going to encounter resistance.
From existing energy companies, from environmental groups, from people who are just wary of change in general.
For sure. So Bob definitely doesn't underestimate the challenges, both logistical and political, that would come with this kind of energy transition.
It's a complex issue with no easy answers, that's for sure.
Totally. And this is where I think it's important to point out one of the things that Bob doesn't address directly in his analysis.
Okay, what's that?
The whole issue of spent fuel rods.
Ah, right. The elephant in the room when it comes to nuclear power.
Exactly. And even though SMRs are smaller and potentially produce less waste than traditional reactors, it's still a major concern.
Absolutely. Because that waste is radioactive. It has to be stored safely for a very long time. And that's no small feat.
And it's expensive, too, both the storage itself and the transportation of the waste to wherever it's going to be stored.
Right. And there are always risks associated with transporting hazardous materials, no matter how carefully it's done.
Totally. So while Bob makes a compelling case for the potential benefits of SMRs, I think it's important for us to acknowledge this big unanswered question.
Absolutely. Because even if we could overcome all the other hurdles, if we don't have a safe and sustainable solution for dealing with the waste, then the whole SMR idea kind of falls apart.
Exactly. And it's something that would need to be addressed head on. You know, we'd need to have a clear plan in place for how to handle the waste, both in the short term and in the long term.
Right. And not just a plan, but a plan that has broad public support and buy-in from all the stakeholders involved.
Totally. Because the last thing anyone wants is for this new energy future to be built on a foundation of uncertainty when it comes to something as critical as nuclear waste.
Exactly. So while I appreciate Bob's optimism and his willingness to think big, I think it's crucial to balance that with a healthy dose of realism.
I agree. And to remember that even the most promising technological solutions often come with their own set of complex challenges that we can't afford to ignore.
For sure. It's about weighing the potential benefits against the potential risks and making informed decisions based on the best available evidence.
Precisely. And that's what makes this whole conversation so fascinating, because it's not just about energy. It's about the future we want to create and the choices we're willing to make to get there. It really makes you think differently about the whole energy equation.
Right? Yeah, like it's easy to take for granted just flipping a switch and having the lights come on.
Totally. But when you start digging into where that power comes from and the challenges of producing enough of it, it's pretty eye-opening.
For sure. And what I appreciate about Bob's take is that he's not afraid to, like, challenge the status quo.
Right. Yeah, he's not suggesting we just tweak things around the edges. He's talking about a fundamental shift in how we think about energy.
And I think that's what's needed, you know, real willingness to consider new approaches and, yeah, maybe even some radical solutions.
Right, because if we just keep trying to patch up the existing grid, we might be missing out on an opportunity to create something truly innovative and resilient.
Totally. And it makes you wonder, like, what if we could hit the reset button and design a whole new energy infrastructure from the ground up?
Exactly. One that's built around these principles of decentralization and adaptability.
Because the world has changed, right?
Yeah.
The way we use energy, the demands we're placing on the grid, it's all different now than it was even a few decades ago.
Absolutely. And I think Bob is tapping into that, this idea that we need an energy system that's as dynamic and flexible as the world we live in.
Right. And it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about creating a system that's more resilient, more sustainable, and ultimately more equitable.
I completely agree. And it's fascinating to think about how this decentralized approach could be applied beyond just energy.
Oh, you know, totally. Like, what about transportation, communication networks, even food production?
Exactly. Could we create a more resilient and sustainable world by embracing this idea of distributed systems?
It's a really compelling thought. And while Bob doesn't have all the answers, and he even admits that he struggled to find good data on the actual costs of all this, he definitely gets you thinking.
He does. And I think that's his real strength. He's not afraid to ask the tough questions, to push the boundaries of what's considered possible.
And that's what we need more of, right? People who are willing to challenge assumptions and explore new ideas.
Absolutely, because the future of energy isn't going to be determined by any one person or any one technology.
It's going to take a collective effort, a willingness to experiment, and a commitment to finding solutions that work for everyone.
Well said. And it's a conversation that we all need to be a part of, because ultimately, the choices we make about energy will have a profound impact on the world we leave behind for future generations.
Absolutely. It's about more than just keeping the lights on. It's about creating a brighter future for everyone.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this deep dive into the future of energy.
Lots to think about, that's for sure.
There is. But if this conversation sparked your curiosity, we encourage you to keep exploring, keep asking questions, and most importantly, keep the conversation going.
Because the future of energy is ultimately up to all of us.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.